State Affairs Committee meeting to order. Today is Wednesday, February 27th, 1991. It is 8:38. Today we have on the agenda House Bill 11 relating to longevity bonus nursing home residents, House Bill 20 with the same title, House Bill 67 relating to impoundment of mistreated animals. We are in teleconference this morning. First bill I'd like to hear is House Bill 67. House Bill 67 by Representative Kopanen, an act relating to the impoundment of mistreated animals. House Bill 67 would allow the Department of Public Safety to impound animals that are certified as mistreated by a veterinarian. We have several teleconference sites online that would like to testify. Representative Kopanen is at the table. I should note for the record that Representatives Cabina, Moyer, Choquette, Ruckman, and Baker are present. reviewing my packet this morning, I noticed that we had a fiscal note from the Department of Law, and now in the last 10 minutes we've got a fiscal note from Public Safety. Is someone here from Public Safety?
Yes.
Representative Kopanen.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Representative Kopanen, and I represent District 21 in the legislature. This bill adds a new section to Alaska Statute 355, which gives the Department of Public Safety discretionary power to impound mistreated animals outside of municipalities and within municipalities that do not provide by ordinance for the impoundment and care of mistreated animals. There is an existing power which allows prosecution of complaints of cruelty to animals under AS 1116-140. There's been a relatively small number of complaints over the years and very little pursuit of it. This has been brought to my attention both by my own experiences and also by different people in interior Alaska, principally dealing with horses. I note that it has an exclusion for livestock. I think you can also, the original intent was to exclude dog teams, which have their own separate kinds of problems and typically are better cared for because, after all, they are a source of livelihood, or at least a hobby. Some people, of course, would like to have it a livelihood, but it ends up only being a hobby for some of the racers. But nevertheless, there is accepted courses of treatment, much better understanding of the conditions under which dog teams can survive. Horses and other large animals have a problem in interior Alaska. If they do not have access to water, a horse can die of malnutrition and thirst, regardless of the amount of the feed that's available. If they have to eat snow, they use up all the energy in melting the snow, and they will die. So you have three sort of categories of neglect in large animals, or particularly horses. One is the unintentional situation that I just described, a person who doesn't understand the kind of care that a horse requires. They don't require a heated barn. They're a plains animal. They do very well in cold weather. The main thing they need access to is water in liquid form instead of ice. So you have some owners who will not know how to take care of their horses, and all they principally need is education. There are some people who buy and sell horses and trade them, and because they operate a very narrow margin, will mistreat them primarily for financial reasons. That is, they're trying to expend as little money as possible in order to maintain the horses. And those people typically run restraints outside of municipalities. And then you have a third class, which is the class that really brought it to my attention. And it was not as a result of anything to do with cruelty animals. The whole argument about guiding and about packing horses. There have been operators from outside outside of Alaska who come into Alaska, and they will pick up the string of horses, perhaps in the Yukon or someplace, and they will run a summer's hunt, even without a guiding license. We've had that situation. And particularly the people who are not registered Alaska guides and who have no long-term investment will then abandon those horses to their fate in the next winter in the hills. And there has been no serving of papers, no arrest in those cases, and I think those people could have been prosecuted on any number of counts, and that is a sort of deliberate mistreatment of animals. So the bill is named at the latter, aimed at the latter two cases. The person who is buying and selling horses and keep too many to take care of them properly, and the person who brings animals in with a deliberate intent of abandoning them at the end of the season after he's gotten as much money as possible out of it. So, essentially, the bill says the department may impound an animal only if the licensed veterinarian has issued a certificate of mistreatment regarding the animal. I think that the fact that it's a discretionary power gives the department a great deal of leverage in such a case. People will attempt to solve the problem, especially the first class of owner who doesn't really understand what's happening to their animal. And for that matter, the person who's buying and selling horses may face an economic loss if they're one. So yeah, the threat of impoundment, I think, is going to be sufficient to bring compliance in most of these cases. It's sort of in-field enforcement. It's not intended to be after the fact, you know, after the animal is starved to serve the person, but to give a ongoing enforcement and give a little more teeth and a little more protection to the animals than the existing statute. Most states require municipalities and counties to enforce these powers, and therefore we do not have counties or boroughs in all areas of the state, and we have a number of boroughs that don't have any statutes of their own. They can escape this by enacting statutes of their own if they do. There are two states that we discovered, I'm sure that there are others, but we found Illinois and Oregon to be the states that also, in addition, have statewide powers. We have essentially adopted the Oregon code here as a model, which, considering that the Alaska law is based on the old Oregon code, I suppose is adaptable. Thank you.
Representative Copeland, does the bill, as you interpret it, require the department to pay for veterinary service, or does it? Is this something, for example, an animals rights group might go out and get a veterinarian to look at first so that they could...
The state has a state veterinarian. Unfortunately, we only have one who's stationed in Palmer. Deputized another. We've tried for a number of years to get a veterinarian stationed in the interior at the port of entry along the Alaska Highway, or at least at Delta or Tok. Unfortunately, the fact that we didn't do that has led to the importation of various outside large animal diseases. I note that the buffalo herd now has a virus that was brought in with cattle that gotten into our stock. So I think, yes, it would require the department to do it, except in cases where they can call on the state veterinarian or university veterinarian if they would in the interior.
If there's some animals rights group or something, a humane society or something that knew of something, could they not have their veterinarian look at that animal?
Certainly, it doesn't require the department themselves employ a veterinarian. In fact, I don't expect the public safety to have a veterinarian on staff. It's more appropriate either, as you say, a private veterinarian working for a public group, essentially deputized, or to have a veterinarian attached to the experimental farm or to the state veterinarian in the case of the Palmer Wasilla area or Anchorage area.
And how would does the state have facilities for housing animals, like horses? And how would you envision the state taking care of them during that
Essentially,
time?
Essentially, they'd have to find areas. Some boroughs have, and for example, the University Experimental Farm in Fairbanks and in Palmer have facilities. There are state impound. There were state impound yards passed for imported animals. I don't think they're still in operation, or rather available. They may be. Any designated area could be used. In other words, it primarily would be a matter of finding someone who is willing to put the animal up. In some cases, it might mean bringing them into a burrow that has facilities like that. But the primary intent is that the threat of impoundment should bring about compliance. It's not the impoundment itself. I think, considering the small number of complaints of animal cruelty that have been pursued by public safety, which is, I guess, a high of 10 in 1 year and the usual number of zero, I don't expect this to be overused. I expect there to be one or two cases a year. And in most cases, I would expect that the trooper could obtain the compliance of the owner merely by the threat of impoundment.
Any questions from the committee? Representative Moyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Copeland. The case you described in which animals are abandoned, I think was said by a guiding service. It seems to me a threat to impound them wouldn't much affect them. They, in fact, abandon the animals. Have you considered any penalties for abandonment?
The case I'm thinking of is quite evident by the middle of the season that since they didn't bother bringing in feed or grain, that the horses were essentially looked like they were being used on the trail of the 98 by the beginning of July. And I think that, yes, the threat of an impoundment, especially when a guy has got a $10,000 or $15,000 hunt, is going to be much more effective in that case than another. I mean, one would not wait till the end of the season.
Thanks for the clarification. I didn't realize your point was they weren't feeding them while they had them as well.
Is there any provision here, and I don't really see it, but does the owner bear the cost any cost incurred by the state to pick up, transport, maintain these animals, feed them, bring them back to health, that total cost be maintained by the owner?
Page 2, line 3, the cost of impounding and care for the animal is a lien upon the animal.
Right, but if the animal, if the people don't want the animal, that doesn't seem like a much of a lien. In other words, in several of the cases that you're talking about.
True, in the case of a person who doesn't want to, however, in that case, they probably would abandon it without worrying about it. Typically, the cases I've cited, people want the animals for one economic use or another.
Representative Breckman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was going to address that question, too, but typically, I believe, then the animal is put up to auction, and the costs incurred are included in the auction price. Frequently, people can buy a very valuable animal at the cost, you know, that was borne by the government or the agency auctioning the animal off. And I would assume, my question would be, that under the care of a veterinarian, the animal would be inoculated.
Well, I think that's the professional responsibility of the vet to determine what sort of services they need.
Thank you.
I would hate to pre-guess what the
No, I agree. I would leave it up to the
Representative Baker.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Coburn, would it be possible if there was a shortfall to attach the person's permanent fund so that if the cost exceeds the recapture value, that the state could go back to recapture those lost dollars?
Well, the statute concerning the permanent fund does allow the estate to recapture the agency, but it's a very broad power for the state to recapture that, you're right. It doesn't have to be specifically mentioned here, but it would require regulation drawn up in that regard.
Representative Shoket.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Copeland is a fairly substantial fiscal note submitted by the Department of Public Safety, which I probably have a tendency to agree this is going to cost the state some money. I'm wondering if we can't strengthen the language in terms of financial responsibility. We can find proof of ownership of these animals.
Well, proof of ownership? You mean a brand or something? Or what?
No, we know that this horse belonged to those people.
If I might, Representative Copeland, on page 2, line 3 and 4, cost of impounding and caring for the animal is a lien upon the animal. What if we just change that? The cost of impounding and caring for the animal is the responsibility of the owner, something to that effect. That way, whatever that cost may be, the owner would be legally responsible for that, and the state then for it could take whatever action is necessary to recoup those costs. Representative Copeland?
I think that would be possible. You'd have to craft it in the proper legal language.
Representative Brockman.
Mr. Chairman, wouldn't that be similar to real estate with a lien against the property, and obviously the owner would have to take care of the cost before the property could change hands?
Well, the way I read this now, if the animal is virtually worth nothing on its dying leg, it doesn't matter that it has a lien on it, you know. But the people are responsible for killing it, responsible for the state incurring a cost of removing it, trying to bring it back to health.
But you're looking for recourse against it.
Absolutely.
Okay.
In other words, yeah. Would you object to an amendment such as that, Representative Copeland?
I would have no objection to an amendment.
Any other questions of Representative Copeland?
You could amend it with that intent and then craft the language overnight.
Right. Representative Moyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This may be better asked as a public safety person, Representative Copeland, but what are the existing provisions for the mistreatment of animals?
I beg your pardon?
The existing provisions in public safety for the mistreatment of animals, the cruelty.
They're in AS 1160-140, fairly narrow. We don't address it here. You have a copy of the statutes up there. Makes it variously a misdemeanor or felony, depending on the case. And it does not address the protection of the animal in that regard.
Any other questions this time? Representative Copeland, you're more than welcome to just pull up a chair there. Representative Miller's not here. Margaret Knuth, if I said that correct?
Margot Knuth.
Knuth.
I wonder, Mr. Chairman, if I might defer to public safety first, because my comments will make more sense following his remarks.
He is not. Mr. Stearns, would you like to testify?
I'm certainly available, Mr. Chairman, sure.
Do you have anything to add, Mr. Stearns?
Oh, I did not understand.
No,
he didn't sign up.
Not any.
Mr. Sutcliffe?
No.
Yeah.
Here, Mr. Chairman.
Would you still like to testify?
Yes, but I'll defer to Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Margot Knuth, and I'm with the Criminal Division of the Department of Law. And I'm in the central office of the Criminal Division, and Mr. Sutcliffe is with me here today. He is an assistant district attorney in Juneau who has previously been in Kenai and has attempted to prosecute cruelty to animal cases and has met with some frustration with existing law. Because of the fiscal impact that the law would have, that is, that this bill would have as currently drafted, we're unable to support the bill, but we do support the concept of trying to do something to allow for the impoundment of mistreated animals and to further prosecution for people who are mistreating animals. one thought that came to my mind was if we could develop a source of funds that could be used for public safety's costs, that would certainly help the problem. And in the past, the Department of Law has suggested program receipt fund mechanisms, and I wondered if something like that could be devised that is funded through a tax or a license on animals. It's just a possible source of money that could be used if all animals had to pay $5 and it goes to a program fund for just being able to enforce an impoundment mechanism like this. That might be useful. Alternatively, when the state prosecutes for cruelty to animals, Mr. Sutcliffe will be able to tell you that we've been able to seize the animals as evidence that needs to be preserved for the prosecution. And it's a little unusual, but it works. It would work better, again, if we had a better cruelty to animals statute. But in the egregious cases, that is one way of trying to solve the problem in a practical way. If I might, I wonder if we could invite Mr. Sutcliffe to come up here and address the difficulties that he's had.
One thing I think I'd like to say to you before you set aside is that I don't buy, personally, the fiscal note. I think the public safety's fiscal note is extremely bloated. And number one, number two, we didn't get it until just a short time ago, which also I don't think is very fair to the committee to be able to analyze it ourselves. And number two, if we change the language as we were talking about earlier to make the owner responsible for all those costs, does this not help get at your concern about the cost somewhat?
To respond, Mr. Chairman, I'm not in a position to know whether public safety's fiscal note is bloated or not. I accept your sentiments about it, and I just don't know. Certainly, the suggestions that have been talked about do go some distance, but I'm not sure you need a financially resourceful owner to be able to go against. And it's possible that people who are mistreating animals like this are out of control in all facets of their life. They're not only abusive to animals, but they're financially insecure as well. That's a possibility. There's also the problem of just the cost of collecting. We would have the right to secure a judgment against the owner. That costs money in itself to get a judgment and somehow enforce it. So it wouldn't be a perfect solution, but I do think it goes some distance.
If with the language that we were talking about here, would that give you the ability to garner someone's permanent fund to recoup those costs? Without specifically mentioning it in the bill?
I don't know, Mr. Chairman. I'd have to study it. It seems like it would, but I'm not certain.
Okay, thank you, ma'am. Any other questions from the committee? Representative
Mr. Chairman, ma'am, we can't dedicate funds for this company, as I understand the Constitution. Therefore, to put a special tax on animals and create this would not be within our capabilities.
Mr. Chairman, in fact, you cannot dedicate funds, but a program receipt fund is something different than a dedicated fund. A dedicated fund says for all time we are dedicating this amount of money to public safety to do these good deeds. A program receipts fund says money that is raised through licenses or taxes on these animals will go into a special fund. And you will be able to see that in that fund we have $125,000 this year, and the legislature will appropriate that fund to public safety for this program. And so it does require the legislature to make that appropriation on an annual basis. And in that, because of that, it doesn't impede the legislature's control in the future. It's not a dedicated fund, and it is permissible. It's an identifiable, discrete fund from which you can make your annual appropriation.
Thank you, Ms. Smith. My question is, in your fiscal paper, position paper attached to the fiscal note, and Representative Copeland referred earlier to the site AS-1116-140. Unless I'm missing something, I looked that up and I can't find it. Is that the correct citation for mistreatment?
The correct citation is AS-1161-140.
Well, that explains that.
Oh, I see. It's,
Representative Bruckman.
Thank you. Unless I'm misunderstanding, are you suggesting an increase in licensing costs then for animals? And I don't understand how that would work because the municipalities would have these services already in place after it's been set. So it would be other than ordinance.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bruckman, I am suggesting that, and it would be those animals where this bill would be governing. And so if this bill doesn't have an effect in Anchorage because they have some impoundment procedures already in place, I wouldn't suggest that those animals be further taxed. But for areas that are outside of places that have existing impoundment programs, presumably there's no tax or license required for those animals, and also there's nobody in the position to impound them right now.
Who would govern that? The veterinarian when they give an annual inoculation, or a specific governmental agency would declare? That would be another further cost, in other words.
Right. I don't know.
Anything else in the committee? Okay, Mr. Sutcliffe, do you want to join us, sir?
Mr. Chairman, I'm J. Ron Sutcliffe from the District Attorney's Office here in Juneau. Previously with the Kenai DA's office for a couple of years up in Kenai. And I had an occasion to, well, first of all, I'm not here either for or against, I'm just here to tell you what problems we had with the statute. I wanted to first talk about the seizure of the animals and the impoundment, and then some problems that I think there are with AS 1161-140. In Kenai, we had a situation where an elderly gentleman had over 120 dogs. I think he had maybe about a dozen horses. Might have been about 10, I think, horses at one point. And it was a very visible location on the side of a main highway between Soldotna and Kenai. People had been complaining about these horses that you could see their ribs and they didn't look too well. They had gone on for a number of years, off and on. Sometimes the horses would look good, sometimes they wouldn't look so good, and eventually it resulted in a prosecution. The problem that I had when I was assigned to it was what to do with 120 dogs and a handful of horses. And the initial response was, well, we'll just get a search warrant, we'll seize them as evidence, because they're obviously evidence of the crime. But the problem with that is, well, who was going to pay for it, one, where were we going to put them, what were we going to do about it? Public safety was understandably a little reluctant to go out there and grab 120 dogs and stick them in a warehouse. And there were a number of solutions proposed. One solution was the animal rights people or the animal welfare group wanted to take custody of them, at least of the dogs, and give them to people, adopt them out, or allow people to treat them. Well, that didn't work because, obviously, when you have 120 dogs, none of them were family pets. And so I was getting calls from the state risk manager saying, whoa, hold on, don't do that. Don't touch those dogs, somebody will get bit, the state will be sued, and it'll cost a lot of money. The animal welfare, so that kind of blocked off that avenue of adopting them out to the animal welfare people. We couldn't really afford to, certainly troopers couldn't afford with that many dogs to take them into custody and feed them, and it was a real logistical nightmare. And finally, we had the gentleman arrested for the crime of mistreatment. We'd gotten enough evidence, actually it was the animal welfare people who kind of let it off by going out there and posing as helpers and collecting evidence. And I don't know if you're familiar with what happens when someone's arrested, but a person is usually given bail unless it's a big felony, and even then they're usually given some sort of bail. And what is commonly done, for instance, in a situation where you have somebody who's been arrested for, say, 5 DWIs, you would give them a third-party custodian who looks after that person while they're out on release pending their trial. And that's what we ended up doing in that case, was appointing a third-party custodian to the defendant and allowing him to be released on the condition that he had to feed his animals. And the third-party custodian we got for that was a neighbor who was familiar with animals. She herself had a sled dog team at one time and was familiar with horses. And it worked for a little while, but after a while there were more dogs dying. I mean, we had pictures of dead dogs and bodies all over the place. A number of horses had died. And for a little while they got better because it was during the summer months. But as we got back into the winter and trial was still pending, there were some more animals did die off, and the third-party custodian was just unable to keep up with that kind of situation, and it would have been better to have had the animals in our custody if possible, but again, there's a problem with money, I guess. What we did with the horses was, at one point, we had a farrier from, I think it was Glen Allen. He was willing to come down and get the horses and take them back to his ranch. He was going to do it for free. I don't know what he was hoping for eventually, maybe to get the animals or something, but he seemed like a sincere individual. But the problem, especially with the horses, is at least we found it was extremely expensive to transport them and take them and put them out to pasture and provide hay. So we never did end up giving the, at least pending the trial. After the gentleman was convicted, we were then able to get a court order to destroy some of the animals that weren't so good. And then at that point, the court structured a probationary scheme for the defendant that he had to comply with certain things and get the dogs up to speed and provide penning and a lot of things that the proposed bill here talks about. But even after it was all over and we'd had the defendant convicted, the gentleman later died in a fire with a number of his dogs. And then we had an order that we could go out and destroy all...
Sweet justice, huh?
Excuse me?
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
I don't know, you wrote that on the record.
At any rate, they even after it was all over, I mean, Department of Public Safety didn't have any money. I spent a lot of time with the animal rights people just trying to figure out how to put a couple dogs to sleep. And I was like, well, Department of Public Safety doesn't have the money. They don't have sodium pentobarbital or anything to put the animals to sleep. Dr. Gore is a wonderful vet. He was always willing to come down and help out the state veterinarian. But Dr. Gore didn't have any of these items to put these animals to sleep. And so I was relying on the animal welfare people to get me just, I mean, it wasn't that much money. I think we're talking about $80 or something to get a couple animals put to sleep. And it was, I mean, there was just no mechanism in the regulations or the statutes that anybody could take control of it and say, okay, this is what we're going to do. And to this day, I don't know what finally happened with some of his dogs. I believe that somebody adopted them or took over his ranch there, basically. But there were basically a lot of problems with that many dogs. And there had been a previous problem in Kenai with a sled dog owner. I think it started in 86 or 87. And what had happened, it was a less number of dogs, I think maybe a dozen or so, at the most 20. And the troopers in that case actually did seize the dogs, as I understand it, as evidence. And to this day, the litigation has not ended over whether the seizure was legitimate or not. Last I heard, it had gone up to the Court of Appeals, and they were still arguing about the seizure of the dogs. And that was it was a huge mess, and it still is, as near as last I heard it was. I guess I'll turn to the statute now, that 1161.140. And I had a lot of problems with the statute.
Excuse me, Mr. Sutcliffe. Could I get staff to make copies of this for the committee, please? We've got it open right here, Mary, if you want to have
it. Mr. Chairman, she might use this one, I think. It flattens out a little better.
Thank you, Mr. Sutcliffe.
Perhaps would the chairman like to ask some questions about the bill?
Well, I guess you've certainly indicated that there's a problem out here, and I'm hopeful that you're going to indicate next some possible solutions.
Well,
Representative Buckman, can you flip your switch back off? Makes it clear.
I really don't know what the solution is. It's a solution that's going to, it obviously costs money, and I don't think it's really my position. Well, actually, I don't understand the process or anything else, and I don't think I can really speak to that. One thing I thought of was that you might want to put a forfeiture clause in the statute, like we have in commercial fishing cases. Like, if you're convicted, you forfeit the fish. You're convicted, you forfeit the animals. It's a lot cleaner way to deal with it. You make it mandatory. The court doesn't have any discretion in it, since it forfeits the animals and gives them to the state. I don't know what happens then.
Do you mind, Representative Shilkat?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In most cases, though, what kind of value does the animal have in this treaty in terms of retribution?
Well, I don't know. In my own experience, I raised sled dogs for a good many years, and mistreated sled dogs sure aren't worth a sack of dog food, even in my experience. But I don't know how much value. Horses, it seemed to me, do have more of an inherent value. You're able to bring them back better. There's less of them. They seem to be more valuable animals. At least people seem more interested in acquiring horses than dogs. I don't really know what the value. value. They probably don't have a great value, at least dogs don't. One thing that someone was concerned about was recovering funds from the owners of the animals. And I think, as Ms. Knuth pointed out, that a lot of the times the reason they've gotten into this situation where they're mistreating the animals in the first place is they didn't have enough money. And I think in the case, the big case I prosecuted there, one of the problems was that the gentleman was in Chapter 11 bankruptcy. He'd had a lot of money and a whole bunch of land holdings, and when the economy went on the skids, he wasn't able to take care of all those animals. So I don't think that, you know, looking to the owner, while I think it's something that's good, I'm not sure that it's always going to be a possibility to get money back from somebody who is in not necessarily in a good state to begin with.
Mr. Sutcliffe, I might ask, it appears in your discussions here of the case in Kenai that in fact you felt you did already have the authority to impound these animals, which is the basic premise of what this bill does.
Right. We felt that we could seize the animals as evidence. The problem with that is, I mean, usually when you seize evidence, you got to go put it in the evidence locker somewhere and lock it up or put tags on it. And the problem with seizing 120 dogs is, well, they didn't all fit in the evidence locker for starters, and we didn't know what to do with them. I think there were some legitimate questions about whether that was the kind of thing that you really could do. I mean, they are evidence of the crime in one sense, but in another sense, they're the victims of the crime, too. And it was hard to make that choice. The problem with seizing them as evidence is you can't, I mean, they can make motions to have the evidence returned, because once you've gotten pictures of the evidence or videotaped the evidence, well, then there's no longer any justification for the state keeping the evidence. You don't necessarily need it anymore.
Did you have recommendations on changes in the existing cruelty to animals section?
I did. I had some real problems with this, and I previously talked to the Alaska animal control officers. I guess it was in 1989. We had a meeting about this. And basically, subsection A1, 1161-140A1, to me, it's unprosecutable. I mean, I would never charge anybody under that. You can't prove that a person has an intentionally inflicted severe and prolonged pain or suffering on an animal. You can prove pretty easily that, sure, maybe they made the animal have some sort of pain, the animal yelped, or horses, I guess it's a different story, it's a little harder to even show that they've had some sort of pain. But I couldn't even begin to try and prosecute somebody under that. Under subsection A2, it's a little easier, although the mens rea of the mental state of recklessly neglecting, it should just be negligent, if you're negligent in neglecting an animal. But then it goes on to say, as a result of that neglect causes the death of the animal or causes severe pain or suffering to the animal. The problem with the section that causes severe pain or suffering is what I just said. You can't prove that. And the only way I managed to convict this gentleman, and I only was able to convict him out of two counts, was that I had dead animals. I mean, basically what it says is you have to have a dead animal before anybody's going to get convicted of cruelty, at least in my experience. And I think that needs to be tightened up somehow to say if you neglect an animal. And I really like the language that has been proposed in the bill here, in Bill 67, about the mistreatment. I think that goes a long way towards, would be a better definition of what mistreatment or cruelty to an animal is. For instance, in sub A, that the animal's not getting the sufficient quality or quantity of food for normal growth and maintenance of body weight. Now, I could see having problems proving that, and you get two vets on either side of the fence, and one says, yeah, they're fat enough, and the other says, no, they're not fat enough. It's a problem. But it's still a lot easier than convicting them under the present statute. I especially like the aspect of the potable water there, the unfrozen potable water. That was a big, huge issue in my case about the horses. The owner kept pointing to him and saying, well, look, there's enough snow out there for 5 million animals. And it's a good, you know, they can't eat it. And jurors have a hard time understanding that. Well, you know, snow is water. What's the big deal? They can go eat it. And as Representative Copeland pointed out, it doesn't do it for horses. So if you put that in the statute, that would go a long way. We had dogs with frozen water. I understand that, at least in my own experience, dogs can to some extent eat snow a lot better than horses can, but it certainly left the horses out in the cold, so to speak. I think that the aspect about making a requirement that they have an access to, I don't know if you need an enclosed structure, but certainly some sort of covered structure that protects animals from wind, rain, snow, and you give them adequate bedding. One of the problems we had in this case was that during the rainy season and such, the ground would become saturated. It was saturated with feces, and that in turn reinfects the animals, the dogs, with all sorts of worms and that sort of thing, which led to, certainly I felt suffering on part of the animals, but again, the animals weren't able to testify. So, again, the adequate space for exercise necessary for the health of the animal, I thought that's another thing that could be incorporated into the statute about what constitutes cruelty. One of the problems we had were this gentleman would have two or three huge giant huskies, Malamute crosses or something, and in it he'd have a little foo-foo dog mixed in with these huge dogs, and the little poodle or whatever was having a difficult time competing when the food got thrown over the fence. And I felt that constituted cruelty, but it's not something that you could easily prove. It's my experience that something really needs to be done about the cruelty statute in order to make it more fair to the animals.
Well, Mr. Sutcliffe, I think your testimony was very enlightening. Very helped me a lot on this bill. Anybody have any questions, Mr. Sutcliffe? Representative Greenberg.
Yeah, a couple things. Did you have anything to do with the physical?
I have no idea. I'm a math major.
Because I think that just, I'm sorry, I've had it.
That's a different department. Don't want to deal with that right now.
Oh, okay. We have problems in Anchorage about pit bulls and biting and throwing puppies and sort of training instruments. Do we have any comments about that?
There is a specific statute that governs promoting, it's aimed at the promoting an exhibition of fighting animals. That's under AS 1161.
Yeah, I see that.
I don't know if that that goes towards your problem. That's something that you probably could prosecute under the cruelty to animal statute. But again, to prove that it was an intentional infliction of severe or prolonged physical pain or suffering, what the defendant will come in and say is, well, I just threw the puppy down there, the dog bit its head off, and it didn't suffer. It's no different than giving it an injection.
By the way, this isn't the first bill we've had, at least since I've been here, dealing with cruelty to animals. So I know that we have had interest in this in the past.
Thank you, Mr. Sutcliffe. We have some people on teleconference. I'd like to give them the opportunity to testify.
Mr. Chairman, will you be hearing from the public safety?
I'd like to give these people a chance to testify.
We will get them.
In Wasilla, are you online? To testify, could you have them do so? Could each of them please state their name and address for the record? And I would request, we have a number of people to testify that they be very brief and to the point in their testimony.
These are the best. Yes, we will. Control said not prosecute these livestock cases because they are too difficult to get a conviction in court, and they have an attorney that is not interested in wasting time on them. So I do believe we need legislation to make it easier to prosecute these cases. There may be some expense involved with this bill, but it's a moral issue also. You can't turn your back on it because there'll be an expense involved. These are living, breathing creatures who have a problem, and they need to be helped. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hale. I don't mean to, I guess I do mean to rush people. I have over 20 people signed up to testify in teleconference, and we only have about 15 minutes. If you could, each person, please briefly tell us if you are for or against the bill, and if you have any major amendments that you would propose to the bill.
My name is Lori Benner, P.O. Box 875186, Wasilla. I support a bill that would help these animals be impounded in a way which an organization maybe be able to support these animals through their own private funding, just make it possible that we could impound these animals to help save them. I've been involved in several instances where nothing has been done and animals have died, and it's just been a problem. Thank you.
My name is John Moss. My address is Post Office Box 870010, Wasilla, Alaska 99687. I've lived in the valley since 1958, and over the years I've seen quite a few cases of horses being abused. I think that some kind of state law is long overdue. So I'd like to see House Bill 67 passed. Thank you.
My name's Roger Hale, P.O. Box 494, Palmer, Alaska. I, too, speak in support of this House bill. There is no current legislation adequate for the protection and care of hoofed animals, and I support this bill. Thank you.
My name is Angela Phillips, 5300 Dunbar, Wasilla, Alaska, and I support House Bill 67. Horses are dying because of neglect, and sometimes it's just lack of funds, and they don't know where to turn. And I think this would give them something that they can do. They can call someone and say, help me, even if it's ignorance is the reason why. So something needs to be done. I support the bill.
I am Minnie Fisher, and I'm president of the Matson Valley Humane Society, and I support this bill, but I would like to add that we need a assistant state vet at the border, and that would cut down on a lot of our problems. And also, you might consider getting a chief state animal control officer. I work very well with Dr. Gore, and I'm familiar with the case that happened in Kenai, and we offered to bring some of the horses up here. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Wasilla. I have a number of people in Fairbanks. I have at least 9 signed up. May I suggest that you sort of take a poll among yourselves and pick a spokesman from each side so that we can hear one person from each side on that issue out of Fairbanks? I'm sorry that that's all the time we're going to have. I'll give you a couple minutes while I get the one or two other people that I have. Also, that each of you are in LIOs, if you would have more to say, please fill out a POM while you're there, address it to Representative Cabina in the State Affairs Office, and we will make sure it is included as part of the record. So, Fairbanks, I will come back to you in a moment. If I could have Anchorage, are you on?
Yes, we're online, and our first testifier is Cheryl Rose.
Cheryl Rose,
my address, 4518 Virgo in Anchorage. Briefly, in the last 6 years, I have taken on and cared for 16 mistreated and starving horses. Some have been placed with other homes. I've had to turn down numerous horses because I could not personally care for them, and there was no place for the animals to go. And I am much in favor of Bill 67. more testifiers who would like to represent their group. My name is Kathy Gleva, PO Box 704-01 Sheerdeck. I wanted to say that I'm very much in support of this bill. I'm a member of the Alaska Equine Rescue, and we are more than willing to take on some of these horses and foot the bill if that's what it takes to have this legislation passed. Horses in Palmer have been tied out by packers and guys used as bear bait, and I just think this needs to be dealt with. Thank you. And yes, good morning. My name is Sarah Clampett from Anchorage. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. I'm a professional riding inspector. I own a horse that guys recovered from my backyard, which probably would have made it through, would not have made it through last winter. I've seen many other horses in the area that we cannot get to because there is not jurisdiction to support us in that. There are many responsible people within the horse community who would be willing to participate and work with the state in alleviating some of the expenses and the responsibility, but we need state support to do this. Thank you very much. That concludes Anchorage's testifiers.
Thank you, Anchorage. Do I have someone in Soldotna, please?
Bill Godick. I'm president of the Alaska Animal Control Association and chief animal control officer for the city of Kenai. Our association is generally in favor of this bill. However, I do agree with Mr. Sutcliffe that we need to look at the present statutes and maybe streamline them to make it easier for prosecution instead of enacting a new bill. Page 3, line 14C, in case of an animal other than livestock, access to enclosed structure, etc. I believe some livestock should have enclosed or some sort of structure to protect them. I also think that any bill should cover all animals, not just hooved animals. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. And I would reiterate again, please, if you have further comments or specific recommendations, please put them in writing for us so that we can work further on this bill. We will not be moving it out today. Fairbanks? Fairbanks, are you there? James, are we still on with Fairbanks?
Fairbanks, can you hear us?
Fairbanks, yes, go ahead, please. Fairbanks, go ahead, please.
Equine Rescue, address is 5243A Broadway, Arlington Air Force Base. We support House Bill 67, along with some revisions that we will put in writing, and we ask the committee if they could reschedule this type of testimony, if possible, at a later date. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. We will do so. Is there anyone there that would like to speak against at Fairbanks?
This is Brad Nestor, 5465 Gia Hot Springs Road, Fairbanks, Alaska. I'm not so much against the bill as having some provisions made in it. This bill should cover all livestock, fowl, moose, bison, etc., used for breeding or slaughter. Dogs should be left in the definition of animal. The state has a $1 dog licensing fee that could be enforced to provide some funds. Also, the amendment from liability for the parties acting under this is fine for the impoundment procedure, but they must be held liable for injuries or death of the animal while in their care. Also, the fees imposed on the owner should be the lowest average in the area. And also, who is responsible for the possible spread of disease or injuries to the animals caused by the impoundment animal?
Thank you, Ms. Nestor. I appreciate that. And all of you, again, I would say that we will reschedule this bill for further hearings. We will more than likely put this bill in a subcommittee here in a very short period of time to do some further work on it and see how we can come up with the concerns of law and public safety. And all of you on teleconference, we would look forward to any further written testimony. We have before us now Mr. Thomas Stearns from Public Safety. Mr. Stearns, first of all, you probably noticed from my testimony earlier, I was not very pleased about getting your disco note the morning of the committee. And, I know that, I'll leave it at that, sir, and if you want to... I haven't read it. I have not read your comments, but if you want to give us a... make any comments, maybe just of what's gone on so far and some of the concerns, we are virtually out of time, so...
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I apologize for the late note. I think what happened in this case is that we recognize the importance of the issue that's before us, and we understand that there's no way to say that we don't support the right treatment of animals. I think what you've seen and heard here today talks about maybe two or three different areas that are very important. I think the Department of Public Safety supports strong criminal investigation and actions towards anybody that meets the elements of criminal treatment of an animal, any of the animals that are domestic, the idea in this case, I think, was that we needed to make some changes relative to the existing statutes to make it easier for us to meet the challenges that we see. That's the first part. The second part is there are a number of organizations out there who have strong support systems to take care of those situations that are less than criminal, and perhaps a better education system within reporting of those kinds of things and where to go and where to get help and where to get instructions on how better to care as an answer, as opposed to adding control, animal control, to our enforcement efforts. I don't tend at all to say that I can accurately give you the number of those incidents that I think that we're going to have to face with. From that standpoint, that fiscal note could well be bloated. As I listened today and the people called, I heard the word numerous a number of times. I heard 14 or 16 animals. We heard over 100 from the district attorney, having been part of understanding the magnitude of taking care of those animals as evidence, and I think that's where we can take those if we change the law, is a major undertaking. The simple disease control, separation, and care that we then take on, I think we owe to the animals and the people to do right. That's a costly figure for us, and I can't give you a number. I guess the last thing that I would say in our position here is that where we have looked and they've had animal control programs started, and basically this is an animal control law, the people who have learned about it tend to increase their calls in. Somebody's going to have to go check those out. We certainly check them out now. If we educate the public and call in us and we can get it to an organization that will care for it, perhaps the non-intentional work, the non-criminal things, can be worked on. Anchorage's program, I think, is 35,000 calls a year. They destroy 6,000 or 7,000 animals that they can't get adopted out. Juneau destroys 60 a month, $200,000 program. I'm trying to be as realistic as I can with not knowing the numbers, and I thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. Representative Shilkett.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Tom, as I look at your breakdown of transportation for impounding, impound fees, facility fees, veterinarian services, Mr. Chairman, we rapidly approach the value of any of these animals in terms of any kind of reimbursement we could get through court actions. I think that a fiscal note from public safety is a reality. I have no way of knowing what that note is, but I'm not speaking out against the bill in any way, but I think from a realistic standpoint, maybe in subcommittee we can we can look at methods at our disposal to try and meet the costs of this bill. I would venture to say the cost of the bill, as presented by Public Safety, would lead to its demise.
Representative Baker,
Mr. Chairman, I guess I'd just like to respond on the fiscal note basis as well. The from experience of a local basis with animal control issues, these are very emotional issues, and people take these issues as serious as they do as their own family, because to some respects, animals become their families. And so, and if anything, and I know the amount of dollars that we used to dedicate to animal control issues in the municipality of Anchorage, and they are substantial. And because, as Tom has indicated, I suspect, my understanding is that we're self-insured, so I'm not sure the $200,000 liability insurance issue is a correct number or appropriate, but I think that the rest of the fiscal load is probably understated, in my humble opinion, for just my experience as to how many dollars, and Tom has given us some factual data. And, I think, Mr. Chairman, as we proceed forward, that maybe we should look at some of the municipalities and ask them to present testimony to this committee relative to the entire animal control issue and how it might, since there is some experience out there in our state, this fiscal note could be substantially higher than what it is even right here. It might change on the line items a little bit, but there's a lot of need out there, and there'll be a lot of interest once it becomes full public knowledge, I suspect.
Representative Moyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I suggest that this amount could be lower, perhaps, if you ran it by Commissioner Keller and let him take a look at it. But, more seriously, did you take into account the fact that the bill in two places speaks of cost being paid by the person who owned the animal? Is that reflected in any way in your fiscal note?
Mr. Chairman, I think that we've heard of several times today that oftentimes the people that are in the dire need of these things that wind up in this situation don't have the funds to pay for it. And it's a collectible fee, which means somewhere along the line the cost of collection are going to be added here. So from that standpoint, no, they're not in there, except we know that it's a hard time collecting them or getting reimbursement for them.
What I'd like to do is place this bill in subcommittee with myself, Representative Shilkett, Representative Baker. Would anyone like to be on there?
As a co-sponsor, I suppose I'll volunteer.
Representative Moyer?
Yeah, my spouse.
Do you not want to be on there, Representative?
I don't care. No, I just...
We will be hearing that in subcommittee, and we will be working on the bill, Representative Copeland, to try to move this bill, come up to something that we are able to move. Thank you, Mr. Stern.
Mr. Chair, you let the entire committee know, because I'd like to attend the company.
You're always welcome on any subcommittee. I did have scheduled House Bill 11 and House Bill 20. Again, I did not receive fiscal notes on these bills until this morning. I sent a letter to the department on January 25th. It's taken over a month to get these fiscal notes. When the governor sends in a constitutional amendment, says he wants us out of here in 75 days, and then they can't get a fiscal note out of the department, it's really quite upsetting to me, to be honest with you. These bills will be held over until we can review the fiscal notes. Anything else from the committee? Next meeting will be Friday, March 1st. We'll be taking up further consideration of House Bill 4 and House Bill 129 at that time. Meeting adjourned.